This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The priority for Senegalese voters are jobs and economy, as inflation has squeezed livelihoods and the nation's growing youth population struggling to find employment.
That's reporter Alpha Diallo with an update from Dakar on Sunday's legislative elections in Senegal. Details coming up also. Hundreds of illegal gold miners are stuck underground at an unused mine in South Africa. And Botswana's new government says it cannot afford to host a UN conference for landlocked developing countries. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Senegal will vote in legislative elections on Sunday that will determine whether the new president and government can gain control over the National Assembly and push through their agenda for reforms. For more on the campaigning in Senegal, I talked to reporter Alpha Diallo in the capital, Dakar.
Campaigning has gone heated in recent days and comes at a precarious time for the new government, which is navigating a sprawling fiscal crisis that could undermine its ability to deliver on promises to boost the economy and create jobs. As you know, Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko, who is also leading the party PASTEF, which is the governing party, known for his fiery rhetoric, said this week that his supporters have come under attack and urged them to revenge and to take revenge. And this has led to several fighting between supporters of his party and supporters of his other coalition, his main challenger, and that is Samusa Kadu, which is composed of several parties like the old PS party and the former party of President Watt. There were heavy confrontations in the Saint Louis in the north of Senegal, which resulted to so many people, you know, getting serious injuries, and more than 80 people were also arrested.
So, like you said, the high stakes in the election are threatening to spark renewed unrest following a period of calm. What are the priorities for Senegalese voters in this election?
That's a very good question. The priority for Senegalese voters are jobs and economy, as inflation has squeezed livelihoods and the nation's growing youth population struggling to find employment. And as you can also remember, this new government, before they came to power, that was their slogan, that they will create jobs. And but it is now 6-7 months now, so the youth are not seeing this. And most of the youth are even, you know, taking the back road syndrome to reach Europe. That's what we call when they taking the sea voyages across the Atlantic. And some of them are also crossing the Sahara Desert trying to reach Europe.
Alpha, can you tell us how many electorates are expected to vote this Sunday?
Yes, according to the National Election Commission, more than 7 million registered voters will have the chance to vote for candidates for the 65-seat assembly, chosen between 41 registered parties and coalition. Polls will be open at 8 p.m. and will close at 6 p.m.
Today is the final day of campaigning. Can you tell us about the atmosphere in Dakar and its suburbs?
Yes, the atmosphere is very electric, but it's also a little bit worrisome. You know, the main challenger of Mr. Ousmane Sonko is the mayor of Dakar, Mr. Bartlemy Diass. Since the campaigning started, the only two people where we have observed or reported, you know, fighting or clashes is between Mr. Ousmane Sonko and the mayor of Dakar. But all the other parties are also today, they are all finishing their rallies in Dakar. People are worried that there might be trouble, but the Minister of Interior have also said that they are doing everything possible to avoid any confrontation, and they have deployed heavy security all around Dakar and its suburbs.
That was reporter Alpha Diallo speaking with me by phone from Senegal's capital, Dakar. Hundreds of illegal gold miners are stuck underground at an unused mine in South Africa that police have surrounded. Kate Bartlett reports that officials are refusing to allow supplies down to the miners, who they say are criminals.
Police initially thought some 4,000 illegal miners were underground at the closed Stilfontein mine, about 150 kilometers from Johannesburg. They've revised the figure to several hundred, but are still denying them food and water as part of Operation Vala Umgodi, or Close the Hole. Police say they are trying to force the miners, believed to have been underground for several weeks, to resurface. They say the miners are refusing to come up, fearing arrest, or in the case of undocumented migrants, deportation. The government loses millions of dollars each year to illegal mining, according to the Minerals Council of South Africa.
We're not sending help to criminals. We're going to smoke them out. They will come out.
That is Cabinet Minister Kumbudzo Inshaveni earlier this week. Anxious relatives have gathered at the mine, hoping to send supplies down to loved ones. On Thursday, a decomposing body was recovered from the shaft. Some have accused the government of taking an inhumane position. David van Wyk, a researcher at the Benchmarks Foundation, a non-profit that works on issues surrounding illegal miners, said what is happening at Stilfontein is a problematic humanitarian situation.
The workers got to be there because South Africa is in a transition. Large-scale industrial gold mining is no longer profitable, and many mines are shutting down, and tens of thousands of workers are losing their jobs.
There's a special word in South Africa for the men who risk their lives searching for gold deep underground, zamazamas, which means take a chance in the Zulu language. Johannesburg, dubbed Igoli, or City of Gold, for the riches that lie beneath, was once a major gold mining hub. Many of the mines have closed, however, and the illegal artisanal miners have gone underground, hoping to get what's left. Most are desperately poor, many from neighboring countries like Lesotho or Mozambique, and stay underground for weeks or even months at a time with no protective equipment in the huge maze of tunnels under the city. Subterranean networks and an underground economy have developed where food and cigarettes, and sometimes even prostitutes, are bought down to the men, experts say. Drug use is rife, and turf wars between rival groups armed with AK-47s and other weapons often break out. While they eke out a meager living, zamazamas have become associated with violent gangs and criminal syndicates that run things and are getting rich from the illicit industry. The Benchmarks Foundation's Van Wyk said his organization has recommended government regulate and legalize small-scale mining. He says there are some 6,000 abandoned mines in South Africa.
So it's basically a free-for-all that has evolved and that has resulted in mine workers becoming super exploited, illegal mine workers, and the police never arrest the mining syndicates that control them. Everyone is profiting from it except the poor guys who find themselves starved underground.
Police say more than 1,000 zamazamas have resurfaced in Northwest Province, where the Stilfontein mine is located, since police started operations there in mid-October. The police minister was visiting the site on Friday. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. We'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Authorities in Sierra Leone have launched an Ebola vaccination campaign targeting at least 5,000 health workers. Many health workers caught the Ebola virus during the outbreak that hit West Africa a decade ago. Victoria Munga reports from Kenema, Sierra Leone.
The name of dozens of healthcare workers who died in the 2014 Ebola outbreak. The names are displayed outside a hospital in Kenema, one of the worst hit cities during the two-year outbreak that killed nearly 4,000 people in Sierra Leone. Mohamed Faker, a healthcare worker here, recalls how many of his co-workers died after contracting Ebola while caring for patients.
That greatly affected me, looking at my, some social activity as well. Let me just ignore myself. Let me look at other people.
Now there's an Ebola vaccination campaign to protect healthcare workers like Feika. The Gavi Vaccine Alliance in June launched a preventive Ebola vaccination program to help contain the disease and protect critical healthcare and frontline workers in high-risk countries like Sierra Leone.
There was that kind of fear among healthcare workers, even among the entire population. So upon taking the vaccine, and I have the confidence that maybe when there is an outbreak, I will not be infected.
The single-dose vaccine is being provided to healthcare workers in countries that have had Ebola cases and those that border countries that have experienced Ebola outbreaks. Oli Khan is Gavi's communication director.
It's going to be 20,000 vaccines to start with, and we feel this is sufficient to cover, you know, the frontline workers I've just mentioned, and protect those that are most vulnerable. And then, of course, we will be replenishing the stockpile so that we still have that 500,000, and then moving to other countries that are at risk of high risk of Ebola outbreaks.
The Ebola virus is spread through contact with the bodily fluids of an infected person. The average fatality rate for Ebola is about 60%, according to Gavi. Since Sierra Leone is considered a high-risk area, the government has set up a public health agency to enhance detection of the disease and prevent further outbreaks. Dr. Mohamed Alex Vandi is with the National Public Agency in Sierra Leone.
We know we are in an endemic zone. We know it's only the matter of when and not if that will be an outbreak. Every week we have a suspected case that we have to respond to. So a dedicated agency has been created to just look at that preparedness and response.
As part of the campaign, community and religious leaders are encouraging the public to accept the shots. The Reverend Usman Fona is one such leader.
We use the pulpit, the mosques use the mimbar, the churches use the pulpit on Sundays and on Fridays, at weekday day meetings. Also at naming ceremonies, when we go to name children, we let the congregation that are present to know the value of vaccination.
More than 11,000 people died during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa between 2014 and 2016, most of them in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. Authorities hope the Ebola vaccination campaign will help avert such a disaster in the future. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Kenema, Sierra Leone.
Not noticeably absent from the annual United Nations Climate Conference this week were the leaders of the world's biggest polluters and strongest economies, the United States and China, as well as India and Indonesia. U.S. President Joe Biden sent a high-level delegation instead. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told the more than 100 world leaders who did show up that the world is seeing a masterclass in climate destruction in a year virtually certain to be the hottest on record. That's according to a recent report by Copernicus, the European Climate Change Service. Copernicus director Carlo Bonotempo tells VOA's Carol Van Damme in part two of their conversation, the evidence is clear. People everywhere must reduce greenhouse gas emissions for the planet to survive.
I have two advice. One advice is to actually base our decision and our behaviors on facts. On evidence. You don't need to trust me as a scientist or any of my colleagues. You can look at the data and look at it yourself and convince yourself of what's happening. Second point maybe worth making is the fact that this is not a simple problem. Had it been simple to solve, it would have been solved already. And really needs all the intelligence that we have, all the smart people we can find to find a solution. Because the solution from a simple-minded person like me is straightforward. Eliminate greenhouse gases excess in the atmosphere. But this simple solution is very difficult to implement. It means changing basically everything we do, from the way in which we produce energy to the way in which we move around this planet, the way we eat. So it's a full revolution that is required, and this requires the best of our intelligence. And lastly, the decision is ours. Each and every one of us' decision matters. It's not nobody else will decide for us, which means that if we believe on the certain things, then we should ensure that the people we elect reflect our views. That's, I think, is the best we can do, because there is no simple solution to the global challenge of climate change, which can only be solved through a global agreement.
You said just a simple person like you, you're a physicist, though, and scientists and other physicists have been warning, like you said, for years about there's going to be irreparable damage and to a point where we can't go back, and that is fast approaching. Are world leaders listening, and other people at COP29 that are making these decisions and commitments, are they listening to the people that know?
Well, in a sense, a way of answering this question is to look at the number of this COP29, right? Had people taken action before, maybe we wouldn't have needed a COP29. So it's not a matter of listening. I think people are listening. The problem is very complex and requires a complex multilateral solution. And this is very difficult to achieve. And my wish, my hope, is the fact that this discussion can be based on facts, not on opinions. We can all have our opinions, but the facts are facts. Temperature are going up in all continents on this planet, in all ocean basins, and this is irrefutable.
That's Carlo Bonatempo, director of Copernicus, the European Climate Change Service, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Bonn, Germany. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is turning to an old ally to lead the CIA and an outsider some see as a potential disruptor to oversee American intelligence agencies when his second term begins in January. VOA National Security correspondent Jeff Seldon has more.
The splashiest pick, former U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard, tapped by President-elect Donald Trump to be his Director of National Intelligence.
Here is the choice that we have. A vote for Kamala Harris is a vote for Dick Cheney, and it's a vote for war, more war, likely World War III and nuclear war. A vote for Donald Trump is a vote for a man who wants to end wars, not start them.
The one-time Democrat became a strong voice for Trump's campaign, rallying crowds behind his agenda.
It's why I'm proud to stand with President Trump and why we, the people, must vote to send him back to the White House and make America great again.
In announcing Gabbard's nomination, Trump praised her fearless spirit, saying she'll bring that to the job. She also brings more than 20 years of experience serving with the U.S. Army National Guard, and she brings a degree of controversy. Working Republican and Democratic lawmakers with this social media video in which critics say she mirrored Russian propaganda about U.S.-funded bioweapons labs in Ukraine, something U.S. intelligence officials say is not true. Republican Senator Mitt Romney called Gabbard's comments treasonous lies, a charge Gabbard rejected. Gabbard's also been criticized for meeting with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, accused of war crimes. But she defended her trip, saying you can't be serious about peace unless you're willing to talk to your adversaries. Trump's choice of John Ratcliffe to lead the CIA is more conventional, Ratcliffe having served as Trump's Director of National Intelligence at the end of Trump's first term. From his days as a member of the House Intelligence Committee,
are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
Ratcliffe has been a staunch Trump ally. And when lawmakers initially forced Ratcliffe to withdraw his name from consideration for the top intelligence post in 2019, Trump had his back.
The press was treating him, I thought, very unfairly. He's an outstanding man.
Ratcliffe got another chance and promised lawmakers he would make sure U.S. intelligence agencies provided the country with what he described as the unvarnished truth. At times, Ratcliffe clashed with lawmakers over moves to declassify intelligence about alleged Russian election interference. He also pushed back against meddling by Iran, Russia, and China.
There is nothing more sacred in our republic than the fundamental democratic principle of one person, one vote.
Trump, entrusting a familiar face and a rising star to lead U.S. intelligence efforts for the next 4 years. Jeff Seldon, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for our sports wrap-up. We have our VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, in the studio. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehias.
Fight. Jumping into the fight world. The great Mike Tyson will be in a boxing match against Jake Paul. The whole world knows Mike Tyson. Who is Jake Paul and how do you see the fight?
Jake Paul is a YouTuber gone pro boxer. He's found a pocket where he's been able to garner his following into seeing his new pathway into this realm of boxing. He, at the moment, currently is 10-1, having lost only one time in his professional fighting career to Tommy Fury, who is the younger brother of the legendary Tyson Fury in the heavyweight division. So obviously it was a formidable opponent that he has lost to, but he has not faced anybody of the magnitude of a Mike Tyson. Although there is a 31-year gap, Tyson has not fought professionally in years. So this will be very interesting to see what is going to come of this. And trust me when I tell you, we are all going to be locked in. Just a few different rules and setups in comparison to how the original fight of this magnitude would look like. It is shortened into 8 rounds as opposed to the traditional 10 or 12 round fights. And also, each round it has been shortened by 1 minute. So originally, they should have been fighting at either 10 or 12 rounds of 3 minutes each. Now it'll be an 8-round fight with 2 minutes each. Now, allegedly, from what Jake and his team have said, that these are stipulations that Mike and his team wanted. And when Mike was asked, he said, yes, it was me that wanted the 2 minutes. And the reason for it is he said he wanted it because there will be more action that will be packed into the 2 minutes. When you have a longer round, there may be moments in whereby both fighters are not really doing too much and they're kind of just feeling each other out. Now you have 120 seconds of chaos. So we'll see. We'll all be tuned in today.
Anything about the payday numbers here?
Numbers are kind of all in the air simply because, you know, it is going to be on Netflix and it's not the traditional pay-per-view route where we can kind of see what the numbers will look like. But if this ends up being as lucrative as Netflix is expecting, we are very much expecting Netflix to move more into this sports realm as well. So we'll see.
So Mokbil, staying with fighting, UFC 309 will be happening tomorrow. What are the biggest fights on the card?
Absolutely. This is very interesting because this is going to be a huge card, especially at the very top where we have at the heavyweight division, John Jones, John Bones Jones, as they call him, allegedly, arguably, I should say, the greatest of all time in the UFC division across, I think, light heavyweight and heavyweight as well. And then you have him going up against Stipe Miocic, who a lot of people actually consider to be the best heavyweight of all time because he's had the most defenses in that region as well. Now, the fighter or the winner of both of these fighters will want to fight Tom Aspinall, who is now the new reigning up-and-coming hotshot guy. But John Jones is very wary about fighting him. He hasn't wanted to talk too much about it. Mm-hmm. But the head of the UFC, Dana White, has said that the winner of this fight should, not will, but should, fight Tom Aspinall. So at the top of that card will be that, and then also a lightweight fight. The co-main chair will be Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler. Huge fight as well.
And briefly, the NBA has some big matches coming up this weekend. Let's go over a few of them.
I would say the biggest ones will be Chicago Bulls versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, simply because the Cleveland Cavaliers are still undefeated. 13 games undefeated into the season. Will they lose their first game against the Chicago Bulls today? Another good matchup would be the Philadelphia 76ers against the Orlando Magic. The young Orlando Magic are in third place, and the Philadelphia 76ers are way down at the bottom. And lastly, the Los Angeles Lakers versus the San Antonio Spurs. LeBron James versus Victor Wembanyama.
Sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tian Wong, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.